we find that human nature hasn't changed very much. And that's because human nature is what is pumped into the human mind from the time that, from the time we're born, actually. And I don't know at what age the spirit of selfishness begins to be pumped into a little child's mind. But I think a little of it certainly is imbibed by 6 months. Between 6 months and a year, if you put two little babies or children that can't walk yet, but can only creep or crawl, and put them on a floor, and put one toy there, you will notice the selfishness. Each one will try to get that toy. So some of that, they're not born with that. And people don't realize what they see, they don't seem to know. They don't realize that God set on the throne of the earth a super archangel. The greatest of all of the angels, except that, well, God did create at least two others, we know, of the same rank and of the same power, but this Lucifer was the greatest, as were Michael and Gabriel, that God himself can create. One thing, though, and I think it's good to just mention that in summary before we start today again, to always bear in mind. There's one thing God cannot create immediately, directly, by fiat, and that is character. If God created us with perfect character, of his own holy, righteous, perfect spiritual character, we would be no better than a machine that a man can make and put together, because it has no brain and has no mind. It cannot make any decisions. It has no personality. And that's what we would be. God even made the angels with minds that could think, minds that could make decisions and come to conclusions, that could consider, judge, and weigh different matters and make choices. Now, God revealed to the angels that he first created the right way of living, which is the way of outflowing love. And that is love, first of all, to our own Creator who made us, and who himself is love, and who is totally unselfish. And that is love to him in worship, in obedience, and in total confidence, faith, and reliance. Then it is love to our fellow human beings, which simply means that we are as much concerned for their welfare and what is good for them as we are for our own, for ourselves, or loving our neighbors as ourselves, as is expressed in the Bible, as Christ himself expressed it. So these angels, when they were created with minds, but with character as yet unformed in them. Now, angels were put on this earth. We don't know whether it was all of the angels or a third of the angels. What we do know is that a third of all of the angels followed this Lucifer, who was put on the throne of the earth to administer the government of God. And the government of God is based on the law of God, and that law is the way of God and of God's character, the way of love, outflowing love, instead of incoming vanity, covetousness, or as we sometimes say, lust and greed, and toward others, a spirit of jealousy and envy, of hostile competition that leads to strife, violence, destruction, war, tearing down and destroying instead of building up, of violence. Anyway, this Lucifer rebelled. You know, I like the way Basil Wolverton explained it. I was just recently going over the Bible story books that Basil Wolverton wrote. And he was explaining that this was, of course, intended for children and aimed at children about the age of 8 or 9. And he expressed it of how this Lucifer first let the idea just kind of toy around in his mind a little bit about maybe competition would be better than cooperation. Maybe rebellion would be better than obedience. He began to think that maybe getting and taking to himself might be better than giving. And he got to thinking, well, what do I care about others? I know if I get into competition, it means the agony of defeat to the other guy, all right. But also it means the ecstasy of winning to me. And after all, what do I care if the other fellow is in agony? And if he suffers, what if I have inflicted a lot of agony on him and he's suffering? I'm not feeling it. I don't suffer. That isn't hurting me. Or, like the modern expression, there's no skin off my nose. And somehow, as Basil Woodward explained it, the more he got to thinking about it, the more it began to take root in his mind. And then he got to thinking that well, what about acting on it? What about actually beginning to do that? And finally, he did. And he talked enough of his angels into it that at least a third of them followed him. A third of all angels. Now, maybe that was all of the angels on earth, we don't know. Or if all of the angels were on earth and a third followed him, then maybe only a third were placed on earth and all of them followed him. God, in his record, the Bible, doesn't reveal that, so we don't know. However, that was the end of the administration of the government of God. And we have been facing the governments of man ever since, because the first man, Adam, made the decision for himself and for his children, his family, and his family, since he is the progenitor of all human beings. The whole world as it exists today is merely his family. And he made the decision for himself and those to be born from him to follow the way of this Lucifer, who was changed into Satan the devil, the way of competition, of strife, of being an adversary, a competitor, instead of one who is cooperating and one who is obedient to his Maker. And he is the prince of the power of the air, this Lucifer, who is now Satan. So God simply affirmed and made binding the decision that Adam had made. And he made it binding on the human race until a certain time. That is, until the government of God should be restored and Satan should be removed from that throne. Now that means that it's until Satan is no longer, you might say, forming and shaping human minds. Because being the prince of the power of the air and the spirit that can surcharge the air, so to speak, with his spirit, his attitude, of hostility, of disobedience, of rivalry, of hostile competition. Now, maybe there could be a friendly, cooperative competition. I don't know. But just in case, I'll put the word hostile before competition. So I'm playing safe there. Because some people just love competition today. But do you know of any competition that isn't hostile? I don't know. I'll leave that to the other fellow. Now, finally, Jesus Christ came, the second Adam, and he made the decision to live the way of God. He never once rebelled against God's law and God's way. Satan met him head on, gave him the most severe temptation that ever came to any living human, and he resisted that temptation. He conquered Satan. He qualified to restore the government of God and to be the one who would rule with the government of God on this earth. Someone had to qualify. The first Adam did not. And no human being has ever qualified. Every human being ever since the first Adam has sinned. That's a Bible word, sin, and sin is merely the transgression of God's law. In other words, we have in our thought and in our actions gone contrary to the way of God's love. Now, actually, sin starts, as you read in the book of James in the Bible, in the mind thinking about something. And the more it thinks of it, it finally decides it'll go ahead and do it. Now, that's why I like the way Basil Wolverton explained this to children in his book for children, that this archangel, first he just toyed around with the idea for a while. He thought, well, there's no harm in thinking about it, because I'm not doing it. But the more he thought of it, the more he got to thinking that he kind of liked the idea. And finally, he decided he would put it into action and do it. He decided, he said, why should I let God rule the whole universe? And I've got only this one little earth. I'm just in charge of ruling over this earth, but my jurisdiction is limited. As soon as you get outside of the bounds of the earth, I have no authority, and God has all the authority. Now, he has authority over Jupiter and Saturn, Mars, and all of the other planets, but that's only just part of one little, our Milky Way, which is one galaxy. And there are many, many galaxies, and God is in authority over all of it. Now, all the endless universe. Why shouldn't I take my angels, convert them into an army, and we'll swoop on up to heaven and we will... I know that God is my creator and maker, and he's stronger than I am. But I'm only one individual. Now, if I add all of these angels to it, maybe all of us put together can be stronger than God. Now, he wasn't quite sure of that, but he must have thought about it. And the thing is, if he did not think that maybe that was true, and maybe they could overpower God, he wouldn't have started it. He's too smart to have started it otherwise. We know that. So he must have thought that all of the angels and all of them put together could overpower their own creator. And so we read of how he went up to heaven. But he was conquered and sent back to earth. Now, everything in the Bible is dual, if you notice. Almost everything in God's plan, the first Adam, the second Adam, the old covenant, there's a new covenant, there's everything at a 1-2 basis. This Lucifer did swoop up there long before man was created on the earth. But there's another time shown when he was to go up and make another attempt. One last final attempt to conquer God in God's heaven. And that's recorded in Revelation 12, and I believe it's about verse 7. And I think we're just about that time right now. It's just about that time right now. When he comes down up there, God just lets Michael and Michael's angels fight this Lucifer and his demons, or this devil and his demons. But Michael prevails. And Satan and his demons are cast back down to earth, and when they're cast to earth, then what does he do? The first thing he does, you will find, is to persecute the church. Now, I have been persecuted ever since I was converted, and ever since I first began to write articles that were published in the Bible Advocate of the Sardis Church, before this church was even started. And when I first began to preach before the Sardis people, though I had not joined them and was not a member in any way, and I was only an invited guest, but they asked me to speak, and I did. And right away, the persecution started from their ministers. Now, their lay members all loved me. They wanted me to come again. They wanted to hear me speak again, although I didn't know how to preach in those days. My wife, at that time, said that that first so-called sermon could hardly be called a sermon. But I didn't have something to say. And that was the main thing. Now, the delivery was not much of a sermon. But the content did say something. God had given me knowledge, and it was knowledge they didn't have about the very subject they were most interested in, which was the Sabbath question. And that was their one great hobby more than any other thing in the Bible. And I had something new they had not seen about the Sabbath. A special Sabbath covenant they didn't seem to know was even in the Bible. But the brethren, they thought that was fine. The ministers, though, were jealous right away. One minister got them to stop publishing my articles in their magazine. I have had opposition in trying to start the work of God when we started from almost nothing. I've had persecution, but the church as a whole had not had any persecution until the lawsuit by the state of California against the church. Now, I just sent in something that was clipped into the office last night. It'll be in the Pastor General's report, and also it is to go. I want it to go, by the way. I didn't mark it on the manuscript, but it should be. I want it to go in the Worldwide News also. That is only a temporary victory in a battle, and it is not the war. The war is not over. The Attorney General and all of his forces are now getting together and trying to get another bill through that will rescind this bill and give him his authority again to renew his lawsuit against the church. And actually, it isn't just the Church of God alone, except that now he's mad, and he doesn't like the fact that we didn't just cave in. And now he does want to destroy us. But actually, there are some, what is commonly called cults. Now, actually, every church that ever started was a cult when it started. Because the word cult is not necessarily something wrong or anything of the kind, but it has come to be an epithet that applies to something that is small and founded on wrong motives and that is hostile against society as a whole. There is a case of some organization. Now, it's not a church. It simply is not a church. But the head of it had a rattlesnake placed in the mailbox of another man. You may remember reading it. It was very much played up in the news about, two or three months ago or something like that. And anyway, they are claiming to be a church because they can get away with a lot of things and avoid taxes that way. Now, things like that, I don't know, I'm not a judge, but perhaps they ought to be put out of business, I don't know. But the thing is, the district attorney wants to group them all into one category, and he wants to destroy us, and if he can destroy us and take us over, then he'll try next to take over other larger churches. And the first thing you know, he will be trying to take over the Baptist Church, the Methodist Church, the Roman Catholic Church, and every other church in California. And they know it, and that's why their legal departments have come to our aid in this battle. But we've only won the first battle. And actually, this whole thing is from Satan the devil. And I tell you why we were picked on, if you don't know. I don't think the Attorney General knows, but I think Satan knows. And Satan knows who he was able to move and into whose mind he was able to plant these ideas. And why does he hate our church more than others? Because this is the only place in the world, the only church, and the only place in the world where the government of God is today being administered on this earth. And there it's administered only among our church members. And we're less than 100,000 around the world. Comparatively small compared to a church like the Methodist, the Baptist, the Presbyterians, the Congregationalists, or the Roman Catholics, or the Lutherans. And yet we're every bit as much a church as they are. No, it is not over. Well, anyway, I was looking through it a little bit. And it's rather interesting. I think it won't take me but just a very short time. I hope it won't. I'll try not to let it. But I made a few notes here. How Paul started out in 1 Corinthians. In the first chapter, his letter to the Corinthians was a corrective letter. Things were wrong in the church there, and he was correcting them. Now, in the first place, he said that we should all speak the same thing in the church. One thing that was wrong in the church, some of them wanted to follow one minister. Others wanted to follow another. Some wanted to follow the Apostle Paul. Some wanted to follow Peter. Or he used the word Cephas for Peter. Some wanted to follow Apollos. And others wanted to follow some other man. And here were some that wanted to follow Christ. But probably they wanted to be loners. And they go on to follow Christ alone. Now, we must all speak the same thing. Now, we are in danger, brethren, of going to the opposite extreme. Right now, I find that there is becoming a tendency in the church to try to make a Christ or a God out of me personally. Now, we're getting away from this thing of others trying to set themselves up, and there were some. I was going over the list the other day. If you go back, those that 10 to 15 years ago were the leading men in the church, 8 or 10 of them are no longer in the church. And I had a talk with Mr. Raymond McNair on the telephone last evening, late in the afternoon, and we were just discussing this very thing. And you know, those who were out, who went out or were put out, some had to be put out, they were the ones who had the personal charisma, who were extroverts, and had the qualifications of leadership, who had the personality, and who had all of that kind of thing among us. and our strongest leadership material has gone out. I don't need to mention the names. Now, about half of all of those that were at the top are gone now. But those of us that remain are not as strong in leadership. And actually, even many of our best ministers and that were the best speakers in the pulpit, the most dynamic, are those who went out. Now, what does that mean? It's something that we come to as we go through Corinthians here. I'll come to that in just a minute. But God has not called many. It goes on to say in the first chapter of 1 Corinthians, God has not called many who are important in this world. Now, none can come to Christ except the Father who sent him calls them or draws them to him. But Paul uses the expression called here. But he called the humble and the weak of the world. And those who were stronger in personality among us have gone out. And those who are a little weaker in those respects are still faithful and still with us. Now just follow me a little bit. I have a little more of that yet. The next Paul says in chapter 2 that he did not speak to them with lofty speech. Those who speak with lofty speech, in other words, the language of scholarship, shall we say, they are the ones that are filled with egotism. They are the ones that are the best minds. But their minds are filled with nothing but materialistic and physical knowledge. So Paul goes on in the second chapter of 1 Corinthians to say that the real truth of God is spiritual knowledge. Our problems are spiritual problems. That's why we can't solve them, because men can't think spiritually. Men can't do it without the Holy Spirit of God. The normal mind of man has one spirit, and it can only think and reason in physical and material terms. And our problems are not in physical terms, but spiritual. And they cannot solve our problems. That's why the world is in trouble. That's where it all is. Now then, if you go back and think, those men who went out from us were thinking carnally. They didn't have minds that went to the very depths of the spiritual knowledge of the Bible. And I'm not sure that every one of them is gone yet. Oh, some of them were very straight doctrinally. But you can be straight doctrinally and still have a material carnal mind. You know that? They were still on the get basis and not the give basis, and get and give are the two expressions that I use to show the way of the law of God and the opposite way of Satan. That every policeman is supposed to enforce that he couldn't remember one-tenth of them if he had to. If you take all of the local laws and ordinances, the state laws, the national laws, that he's supposed to enforce, there are so many laws. God's law is not like that. God's law comes out with just one word, love. Now you apply it. But God shows us how to apply it. You apply it, first of all, love to God. And secondly, love to fellow human. Now, the first four of the Ten Commandments give you four general, broad principles of applying how you love God. The last six of the Ten Commandments give you six broad principles of love toward your neighbor. The first one of those is love your father, honor your father and mother. Thou shalt honor thy father and thy mother is the fifth commandment, the first of the last six. Well, in other words, your first then principle, the way you love your fellow human being, first of all, is through honor to your parents. That is first of all. And then the others that come along after that. Unfaithfulness to a husband or wife, stealing, all of those things down to coveting, which is more or less a foundation of everything. And they all are principles. Now, in 2 Corinthians, Paul comes to the fact that the law is spiritual and that everything is according to the Spirit or its obvious intent. God doesn't give us every little law. For instance, when I was first converted, I had to decide, well, I want to know now, do I have to find a law? I was smoking cigarettes. I actually smoked an average of about 2 or 3 cigarettes a day. I don't mean packs, I mean cigarettes. I smoked a brand of cigarettes in those days that came with 10 in a box. They had cork tips, and well, I was, you know, I thought I had to be, have to have the best of everything, and these were supposed to be a very, very good brand, you know. But there were only 10 in a box. A box would last me an average of 3 or 4 days. Now, once in a while, I would smoke a cigar, but if I smoked a cigar, I didn't smoke any cigarettes that day. So I was not a heavy smoker. But I did smoke. I have to admit it. Now, I'm not proud of it, but I did it. Anyhow, I began to say, well, it might be offensive to some, and even if others might enjoy it a little bit, I'm not giving them enough special enjoyment to make any difference. Then I thought, I'm responsible for this body of mine. What's the effect of smoking? Well, now, I didn't know that it had anything to do with lung cancer. I don't think anybody knew it back then. That's 53 and 54 years ago. But I did know the purpose of the lungs and that they filter out the impurities from the blood and that that's their function and that they oxidize the blood. And it needs to be clean, pure air to oxidize the blood. And if it's dirty air, it isn't going to filter out other dirt anywhere near as well. So I knew that smoking was injurious to some extent. I didn't know how great an extent, but I knew to some extent it was. Therefore, I said it is on the selfish side, the getting side, and not the giving side. I gave it up. Now, that is the way we are to judge things, according to the law and according to its obvious intent or spirit. Now, in the 6th chapter, some were going to law and man's law instead of to the church where God's law is in effect.